Okay. All right. Tzoraim tovim, erev tov, good afternoon, depending on where you might be. Maybe good morning for those in California. And I want to welcome everybody to the first of a three-part series. A pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Aaron Adler. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors of this series, Carl and Joel Cohen, in memory of their father and grandfather, Dr. Arthur Cohen, Avram Yitzchak ben Kalman Mordechai HaCohen. And the truth of the matter is, Carl actually asked me if we're doing anything on any stuff on the Rav, because Rav Soloveitchik greatly influenced his father. He was at their wedding and influenced him in his work as a biochemist. And I really want to thank the Cohen family really for giving me the idea to invite Rabbi Adler again. We've had Rabbi Adler a number of times, always a pleasure to have him back for a series on Pesach. I'm sure many of you remember, gave a wonderful series on the Rav Yom Kippur. And Rabbi Adler has been in Israel many, many years, serves today as the Rav of the Ol Nechama Shul in Katamon, the founder of Bnei Kiva Yeshiva High School, many, many activities. His most recent claim to fame, if I can say that, is his book that came out literally 2 weeks ago, I think, on Vayehi Bin Soa Aharon, 70 Conversations with Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Adler, as I'm sure many of you know, was the Shamus, the personal assistant of the Rav in the early 70s, before he made Aliyah, and has, of course, an intimate relationship with Rav Soloveitchik. And Rabbi Adler, a pleasure to welcome you back for our series on Pesach. Who knows four? I know four, I hope.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rabbi Kalman, and welcome to each and every one of you from, as they say, B'chol Atar Va'atar, wherever you may be, studying Torah. Who knows four? I mean, we get to the end of the Seder, and to a large degree, we are willing to, you know, close up the table already. And we have these songs at the tail end, the Chad Gadya and the Echad Miyadeya, and so on. There's so much knowledge and emotion packed into these poems at the end of the Seder that it's really a shame just to gloss over them quickly. We're not going to analyze the Echad Miyadeya, who knows one, but I'm just using out of context the question on number four. Who knows four, Arba'a Miyodea, because in this three-part series, we're going to deal with the number four as it relates to the four questions in the beginning of the Haggadah, and we're going to relate to the four sons as educational models, and then we will relate to the four cups that very much have to do with various mitzvot of the night of the Seder, and also speak of a trajectory of Jewish history. Most of the salient features I've had a great sort of hearing from our great Rebbe, the Rav. In the past years, many, many Svarim have been printed on the Rav's Torah. One is his halachic explanations to halakha, and this was called Siach HaRav, and it was Siach HaGrid. HaGrid is HaGaon Rav Yosef Dov. It was published by the Rav's grandson, Rav Yitzchak, as I called him as a kid, Yitzi Lichtenstein, and he is today the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva in Brooklyn, New York, the Torah V'Da'at Yeshiva, which is a story in itself. All of the other children of the Lichtenstein from Lichtenstein are in Eretz Yisrael, and one Rav Moshe is now one of the Rosh Yeshiva, succeeding his father, Yeshiva Tar Etzion. My own brother from Teaneck, New Jersey, Rabbi Yosef Adler, published a Haggadah Shel Pesach with some of the thoughts of the Rav. And here, instead of dealing with the halakhic material, he dealt with more the hashkafah, the philosophical side of the Rav. Rabbi Menachem Genak from the OU published a Haggadah with the Rav's ideas as well. And just recently, in the series of the Rav's Chumash and the Rav's Siddur and the Rav's Machzer, so now there's the Rav's Haggadah, that I believe Dr. Arnold Lustiger may have had a hand in it, as he does so skillfully. So there's so much out there today in terms of the Rav's understanding of Pesach specifically, and of course many other areas of halakha in general. The Rav always took note of the fact that the Gemara tells us in Masechet Pesachim Davav, Sholim v'dorshim bilchot Pesach kodem ha-Pesach 30 yom, that 30 days before Pesach, we are to begin discussing, asking questions, and contemplating matters of Pesach. One of the reasons is that material is so vast that it requires a review on an annual basis. And the second is, in order to experience a type of Pesach that we never had in previous years, it's not just a rerun of last year's and the year before. Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo kihilu yatzam mimitzrayim. There's obligation that we're supposed to feel as if we have left Egypt. The only thing is, the Egypt of each generation changes, and therefore the sensation of whatever we're going through, it's not just a historic record, what happened approximately 3,500 years ago, but we're supposed to go through some type of experience at the Seder night. And therefore, it does require to reorganize our thoughts using the halachic material, and this takes time, and the Chazal gave us a 4-week period. There's actually a secondary view, Shtei Shabbatot, which means 2 weeks. You know, some people like to do things quickly, but the basic line that's adopted by the Rama in Shulchan Aruch is Shloshim Yom, 30 days. And therefore, when the Rav gave public shiurim after Purim until Pesach, he always dedicated the subject matter to Pesach in various forms. And obviously, the Seder night was a very, very important subject of discussion. So tonight we're going to, well, this afternoon, wherever you may be, we're going to discuss the four questions, the Manishtana, and we're going to see that it is a launching pad for discussion of the key central mitzvot of the night. We grew up, many times I like to ask adults, and I asked them, who can remember the very first Mishnah you've ever studied in your life? So the people scratch their heads and they think maybe it was Pirkei Avot. They may have studied Pirkei Avot in school. They may have studied Masechet Brachot in school. They may have studied Masechet Baba Kama in school. And they go back to their formative years in school. And when was the first time they opened up a Mishnah? And they're thinking in terms of formal learning. The answer is the first Mishnah every Jewish child learns in his lifetime is Manishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol Halaylot. The only thing is that the kindergarten teacher, the Ganenet, never told them that it was a Mishnah. And I might even guess that the Ganenet may not have even known that it's a Mishnah. But it's a Mishnah in the last chapter of Masechet Pesachim. Now, all of you who are doing Daf Yomi, this is a blessing this year, because only once in 7 years do you get around to learning, studying the whole Masechet Pesachim as part of the whole Shas. And the way it came out this year, the Siyum of Masechet Pesachim is going to happen in less than 3 weeks' time. It's actually going to end the day before Election Day in Israel, which means on Election Day, the Masechet that's going to be studied is Masechet Shkalim. And I've told people here in Yerushalayim, there could not be a better Masechet to begin on Election Day, because it all has to do with Shkalim in this country. But the fact is, by the time we're days away from Pesach, a student of Daf Yomi will have gone through that last chapter, the 10th chapter, that's all about Seder night and various issues and opinions and so on. And there you have the Manishtana. The Mishnah tells us in the fourth Mishnah of the 10th Perek, Mazgolo Kos Sheni. We're up to the second cup already, because the first cup was Kiddush. And then you have these preliminaries until you get to the Manishtana. You've already done the Urchatz and the Karpas, and traditionally we have Halach Ma'anya that we do. And then we get to the Manishtana. But before the Manishtana, we pour the second cup. Now that second cup is not going to be drunk right then. It's going to wait on the table until we get to the end of Magid, where you say Gaal Yisrael, and then you're going to make the bracha Borei Pri Hagafen. So one idea that the Rav talked about was a custom that I don't know if it originated in Volozhin. It most probably has its roots in the Vilna Gaon. But whenever there's a cup of wine for purposes of a mitzvah, a topic that we will discuss in the third part of this series, we hold the cup in our hands. For example, you make Kiddush Friday night. The traditional custom is that you hold the cup in the hand. You make Havdalah, you hold the cup in the hand. You have a bracha under the chuppah, you hold the cup in the hand. Whatever is a bar prayer gofen that's associated with mitzvah, and we call this a kosher bracha, you hold the cup in the hand. So the question is, what do we do when we get to that second cup of wine? First cup of wine was Kiddush. And Kiddush you have Friday night, and Kiddush you have every other Yom Tov night. So there's no big deal that there's Kiddush on the first night of Pesach. But the second cup is big news. No, we usually don't pour out a second cup. So the Rav said that in his family, the custom was to hold the second cup for the duration of Magid. Now, 1 second. Do you know how long Magid takes? When you start with Manishtana, Avodah Mayinu, the story of Rabbi Akiva Bnei Brak, and then you get to the four sons, and then you get to the whole medrash of Matril Bignut Musayim Bishvach, and you get to all the songs of Dayenu, and until you get to, you have certain preliminary chapters of Hallel, until you get to that bracha, she'galanu v'galat avoteinu, and end with Baruch Ad Hashem V'al Yisrael, even if you're not stopping to say Divrei Torah and to explain, it's going to take time. You're holding this cup for quite a long time, especially if you pause between chapters to carry out a discussion, which is obviously the proper way to do so. So the Rav qualified, and he said that they would put the cup down on the table when they were carrying out these discussions. But when they were reading the text of the Haggadah, they would always pick the cup up. Now, what we do, when I say we, the majority of Klal Yisrael, the mainstream, and you have these indications in the Haggadah, there are several times over where in the Haggadah it says, now we raise the cup. You pick your cup up. For V'hi Shamda Labotenu. For L'fichach Anachnu Chayavim Lehodot. Why was that done? Most probably it was done to remind us that we actually should have picked up the cup every single time we read a paragraph. But we don't. Why? Because we've become weaklings. We've become people who cannot hold the cup the whole time, and not everybody can do it, and not everybody has that dexterity to do it or the patience to do it. So we've become a little bit lax, and it's okay because it's not that we're out of sync. Our grandparents and great grandparents also put it down, and what they did was also Torah. But the idea that in Volozhin they were very, very careful to hold the cup every single time they were reading a chapter from the Haggadah, for the entire duration of Magid. So this begins at the Manishtana. You pour out the cup, and then the Mishnah says, V'chan ha-ben sho'el aviv. The child asks the father. Now, what does the child ask the father? The Mishnah doesn't tell us what the child asked the father. The Mishnah continues and says, V'im ein dat ba-ben aviv melamdo. And if the son does not have enough developed intelligence, then the father spoon feeds him with questions, teaches him how to ask the questions. If ein dat babein aviv melamdo, what does he teach him? Manishtana alayla zeh mikol alaylot. Let's see what's different tonight of all other nights. And the Mishnah spells it out that the first question has to do with chametz and matzah. Alayla zeh kulo matzah. Tonight we just eat matzah. The second question has to do with moror. The third question has to do with Korban Pesach. Let me just read it, because the words may sound a little strange. We don't have this in our Haggadah. Shebechol halelot anochlim besar tzali shaluk umuvushal. All nights throughout the year, we eat meat that's been roasted, that's been potted, and that's been cooked. So I'm not a chef, but I do know that there are different ways to prepare meat. Halayla hazeh kulotzli, tonight everything is roasted. So on the word kulotzli, there's a whole discussion in the Tosfot whether every type of meat that is eaten on Seder night has to be roasted or not. That's not our discussion right now, but that impacts on the language of the Mishnah. Does the Mishnah say halayla hazeh tzli or halayla hazeh kulotzli? The same issue is with the word kulo with maror. Now, is it halayla zeh kulo maror? Tonight we only eat maror? With regard to matzah, it's correct. There is no chametz, and what's left is only matzah. Halayla zeh kulo matzah. But with regard to maror, there are other vegetables out there. You're allowed to have potatoes, and can you imagine if Jews didn't have potatoes for Pesach? I mean, I can tell you that in Europe, there was this issue that there was some Rav, who is the author of the Chayei Adam, Rabbi Avram Danzig, over 300 years ago, who suggested that potatoes might be kidneyed, might be covered by the prohibition of eating legumes, and we should Ashkenazim shouldn't eat potatoes on Pesach. And a Rav from Poland wrote to him, and he said that in Poland, the potato is the Chayei Adam. We live on potatoes. You cannot prohibit potatoes for Pesach. And of course, this strict opinion of the Chayei Adam was dropped. And today, you know, that's what you do when you shop for Pesach. You know, a lot of eggs and a lot of potatoes. So you eat potatoes, you eat carrots. And it's not kulo maror. So there are some hagadot where the word kulo is either in parentheses or it's just not there at all. Halayla ze maror. The other thing is it doesn't fit with the song that the kindergarten teaches the kids. Halayla ze kulo maror. The words don't fit. So it's going to be a hard thing to tell a four-year-old to delete the word kulo. So we'll leave that out. But the same thing with kulo tzli. So that's not a relevant question today because we don't even say that. It's interesting. We'll see in a moment that there was a Haggadah. I'm just going to jump to source number 4 on my page. This I found in the Haggadah Shlema of Rav Menachem Kasher Zatzal. He is the great, great editor of the Torah Shlema. And in 1960, Tavshin Kaf, he did a pet project called Haggadah Shlema. And he prints a facsimile of a manuscript of a Haggadah from Ashkenaz from the 14th century. And there, it was just a fragment, but on that fragment, it had the Manashtana. Now, in our Haggadot, we do not ask a question with regard to Korban Pesach. We delete it. It's simply deleted. But this Haggadah actually had the question for Korban Pesach. Now, they were not offering the Korban Pesach in any community in Ashkenaz. That's for sure not. But the version of the Manashtana said as follows. Halayla hazeh, hayinu ochlim beveit HaMikdash kulotzli. When the Beit HaMikdash stood, we used to eat the meat that was completely roasted. Now, this little literary gimmick of maintaining the original version of the Manashtana that was relevant in the days of the second Beit HaMikdash when this Mishnah was composed, Halayla Azeh Kulotzli, and deleted after the destruction, there obviously were some communities that did not want to let go. They didn't want to let go. And they wanted to maintain the fact that there is Korban Pesach in the discussion, if not in the Seder, on the Seder itself. Now, you know that on the Seder plate, we actually have the zroa, we have a shank bone that's roasted and it's placed on the Seder plate to remind us of the Korban Pesach. We also have, in Ashkenazi circles at least, a hard-boiled egg to remind us of another Korban that was brought on Erev Pesach, and that was called the Chagigat Arba'asar, the special Korban for the 14th of Nisan, not to be confused at all with the Korban Chagigah, the Yom Tov Korban, that a person would offer upon arrival in Yerushalayim on the 15th, in the daytime of Pesach, where he should bring a Korban, V'samachta B'chagecha. But that on the 14th, he would bring also a Korban Chagigah. For what purpose? The Korban Pesach, which essentially is lamb chops, and if you go to a restaurant, a very, very fine restaurant, and you order lamb chops, so you don't find lamb chops under the dessert category in the menu. You have other nice things under the desserts. We call in Hebrew the kinuach. But what exactly was the Korban Pesach eaten? It was eaten after you finished eating. You already are ne'echal al hasova. You're already satiated. Then you have to eat a kezayit's worth, which is not a lot of meat. And one animal, one sheep, can go around for many, many families. So you didn't have to have millions of korbanot Pesach. One sheep can go for 30, 40, 50 people because the portions were minuscule. It was just a kezayit. How did you fill up the belly? You had to have something else on the menu as the main course. And that was the Korban Chagigat Arba Asar. That was this animal that was offered in Beit HaMikdash, and the meats were provided for the person who came to the Beit HaMikdash. And that's what he served at the Seder night meal, so that when he gets to the eating of the Korban Pesach, he's basically full already. But he's left a little bit over. Like many of us, we know there's a good dessert coming, so you don't stuff yourself till the end. You leave a little bit just for those last unnecessary calories. So we do these things. Now, just to imagine what we're talking about, how many of us eat the afikoman matzah with gusto? We've eaten matzah before. Now, some of us really look forward to the mitzvah of eating matzah, and there's an Ashkenazi custom not to eat matzah for a month before Pesach. Some people have it 2 weeks before Pesach. So we've been weaned from matzah, because matzah you can eat on Hanukkah, matzah you can eat in the month of Shvat and so on. But when it comes to the middle of Adar, we wean ourselves from matzah, and we get to the Seder night, and we're looking forward to this mitzvah of eating matzah. That's fine. So you have matzah, and then you have the sandwich, the matzah with the maror, the korech, and then you eat your meal. You eat a whole meal with a lot of potatoes, don't forget. And then you're really full. And then comes the afikoman. Now, we eat that. You know why we eat the afikoman? Because of mitzvah, that's all. Nobody's hungry any longer. Nobody's looking, you know, to put some whipped cream on top of the matzah of the afikoman just to make it a little bit more tasty. We're eating it because it's a mitzvah. That's how they ate the Korban Pesach. Nechal al Hasova. So you have the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, the way it was fulfilled in the days of Beit HaMikdash. And we don't have this today, so we put the zroah, as we mentioned, on the Seder plate to remember. The Beitzah, the egg, was for that second Korban. Just parenthetically, those who did study the Daf Yomi most probably encountered or remember the sugya of what happens when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbat. That happens occasionally. And then there's a whole discussion whether this Korban, Chagiga Arba Asar, you're allowed to bring it, offer it on Shabbat. Because on Shabbat, you're only allowed to offer obligatory korbanot and not optional korbanot. And this korban chagiga might be classified as an optional korban. So that's a discussion when you talk about the Erev Pesach, Shechal Liot B'Shabbat, Erev Pesach coming on Shabbat, as we have it this year, a particular issue. But now getting back to the Manishtana. So we have in the Mishnah itself four questions. We have matzah, maror, korban pesach, and the final question that's found in the Mishnah is the dipping two times. The language is a little different than we have in our Haggadah, but fundamentally it's the same thing. Shebuchol alelot anu matbilim pam achat. We dip once throughout the year. Basically, it means bread in salt. Halayla hazeh shtei pamim. Tonight we have two dippings. Fine, two dippings. So Ashkenazim have a dipping in salt water with the karpas and a dipping of the maror and charoset. The Rambam, representing Sephardi tradition, doesn't know from salt water. All the dippings are in charoset, including the karpas. Fine. So that's the last question. What's missing from the four questions? The question about misubin, from sitting, from reclining. So let me just say a parenthetical word about misubin. If you've seen picture films or plays of Roman society, so the ones who sat at a table on chairs were the slaves. The nobility, they ate on sofas, on couches, and they had like coffee tables next to them. That's how they ate. That's called misubin. And what Chachamim said was that we all on Seder night should feel like Roman nobles and should lie down on the couch and have a little coffee table and so on. So I will tell you that after I heard from one of my great teachers at Yeshiva Taratzion, Rav Yaakov Meidan, the great Rosh Yeshiva, that his Seder is not conducted at the table where you normally have a Shabbos and Yom Tov meal, but in the living room where you have sofas and recliners and you can bring some mattresses and so on. So several years ago in my family, we went over to that mode, and it is really a different experience. Don't worry, we get back to the table to eat the meal. But we, from the time of Kiddush until the time we're going to sit and eat, you know, matzah, maror, and so on, we're actually in the living room area, and the misubin is this reclining on a recliner. That's why we call it a recliner, and so on. But what happened throughout the years, because of European influence, people, even noble people, sat up on chairs next to a table. The whole idea of haseva lost its impact. And one of the Rishonim, one, he's known as the Ravya, he said that today there is no haseva any longer. It's just disintegrated. The whole idea does not exist anymore. So it just doesn't, you don't have this. But most of Am Yisrael nevertheless decided to hang on to Misuvin. So what we do is we turn the chair around a little bit, we put a pillow, we lean over a little bit, and that's Misuvin. But the question of Misuvin is not mentioned at all in the Seder of the Mishnah. It's not mentioned. You have the four questions, the matzah, the maror, the korban pesach, the tzli eish, and the dippings. There's no question at all about Misuvin. Now, those of you who know the map, the roadmap of Israel, modern-day Israel, there is a junction called Tzomet Misuvin, Misuvin Junction. It's not far from Bar Ilan University. It's on highway number 4 that stretches from north to south. And just south of Bar Ilan University, you have this intersection, this junction called Tzomet Misuvin. And you know why it's called Tzomet Misuvin? Right next to Bar Ilan, which is on the outskirts of Ramat Gan, is the city of Bnei Brak. And you remember from Seder night, there's the story of Rabbi Akiva and four of his chaverim in Bnei Brak. Maseb, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Tarfon, Uloza ben Azariah, Shayu Misubin b'Bnei Brak. What does it mean, Misubin? It means they were conducting the Seder, Misubin. They were reclining at the Seder in Bnei Brak. So the Bnei Brak of the days of Chachamim, that was not the Bnei Brak exactly where it's today. It's close by, and that's the reason why the modern-day Israel, the place which we call today Bnei Brak, is called Bnei Brak. But the precise place of Bnei Brak of the days of the Mishnah was this intersection, and that's why they called it Tzomet Misubin. It's straight out of the Haggadah of Pesach. Now, the Rambam, when he talks about the Seder night, he tells us that there were 5 questions. What do you mean 5 questions? Where do you get 5 questions from? Well, it's a very interesting thing that happens in the Rambam. Rambam lives in the 12th century. He's born in 1138, even though many history books record it as 1135. That's a story in itself. And he passes away, according to everybody, in 1204. We have documentation about this in a letter from his grandson, Rabbi David ben Avraham ben Araba. So he's a 12th century personality. He's from Cordoba in Spain, except that at age 13, he's already out of Spain. He's in North Africa. And he makes his way eventually to Eretz Yisrael for a short amount of time, for 6 months, back to Alexandria, Egypt, and then south to Old Cairo, known as Fostat. And from age 30 until the end of his life, which is 66, Rambam spends his time on Egyptian soil. So the Rambam's Seder obviously did not include Korban Pesach. Yet, when he documents and records the halakha of Seder night, he's imagining that the Beit HaMikdash is up and running. That the Beit HaMikdash is up and running. He's not living in an illusion. He knows Beit HaMikdash is not there. But he presents the entire Seder as if Beit HaMikdash is fully functioning, and then gives us no fewer than 6 parenthetical inserts, u'bazman hazeh, but today we do such and such. And that's remarkably interesting, because the Rambam, unlike every other halachis in post-Beit HaMikdash era, Rambam gives us the Beit HaMikdash Seder. And everybody else gives us the, what we might say, the diaspora Seder, the Seder of the Galut. So why does he do that? Because the Rambam believes that when we get to Seder night, we must remember Beit HaMikdash. And the only way to remember Beit HaMikdash is to remind ourselves what the procedure was when the Beit HaMikdash stood. Then when it comes to the practicalities, we know that this we cannot do, that we cannot do, this we have to change, that we have to change. So the Rambam begins by telling us that on the Seder plate, you have the Gufo Shel Pesach, you put the meat from the Korban Pesach that's been roasted, and the Rambam doesn't have an egg, but he has another meat as the second for the Chagigah, and that's all on the Seder plate. But now that we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, so we have the Zroah, we have the second Tafshil, the second cooked. So we use an egg, but whatever it is, the second cooked item on the Seder plate. When it comes to the four questions, the Rambam says there are five questions. The five questions are our four questions, plus the question of Sliyesh, of the roasted Korban Pesach. So there's nothing mystical about the number four. He says there are five questions. It's as simple as that. Five questions. But he says, and I'll read it, the Rambam says, Bizman hazeh, but today, Eino Omer, we do not say, V'alayla hazeh kulot zli, she'en lanu korban. Because we do not have a korban, we push the delete button on the question that relates to the Korban Pesach. So why does the Rambam bring it originally? He knows that we're going to study the halachot, because he wants to train our minds that Korban Pesach is an integral part of the Seder. And the fact that we don't have it, it should trigger a passion of avelut, of mourning, and to remember Beit HaMikdash. Now, I'll just use another example. Remember, towards the end of the section of Magid, we say, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'pesach lo yatzai yedei chovato. Whoever does not explain these three matters, did not fulfill his obligation of the Seder, what are they? Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Okay, now if you remember our Haggadah by heart, we read, Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bizman shebeit HaMikdash kayam, the Korban Pesach that we eat, what we would have eaten at the time of Beit HaMikdash, or that was eaten at the time of Beit HaMikdash, al shuma, why was it? And we supply a pasuk. But then we say, Matzah zu, this Matzah, and now the custom is to point to the matzah. Matzah zu sha'anu ochlim al shuma. We give a pasuk. And then we say, maror zeh sha'anu ochlim. The reason the way we eat the maror is this. Many years ago, I had the opportunity of teaching Jewish art at the Emuna College for Art and Technology in Baca in Yerushalayim. And I came across an illuminated manuscript of Haggadah Shel Pesach, where the artist not only drew nice pictures around the bookends, but he actually illustrated what the person leading the Haggadah should be doing at the time that he's reading the Haggadah. So at the section that says Matzah zu she'anu ochlim ashuma, you have this picture of the head of the household lifting or pointing to the matzah. The next paragraph says Moror zeh she'anu ochlim, and you have the head of the household pointing to his wife. Now that is really, really. I told this once to my wife, and she says, "You better not do that at Seder night." I mean, that we understand. The funny part was, it came from a German Haggadah of the 13th or 14th century, and I didn't think that they had that kind of sense of humor that to do this, or that somebody could even get away with it. Because if this is an illuminated manuscript, it wasn't just that the artist had this, you know, crazy idea. He must have been documenting something that was done. And my gosh, the wife was probably broke her back for 30 days to clean up the house for Pesach, and that's what she gets in return as a reward. Moror zeh. It's a terrible, 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 terrible thing. But Pesach, we just say, Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bizman shebeit HaMikdash kayam. But when the Rambam presents the Haggadah, he says, Pesach zu sha'anu ochlim, the Korban Pesach that we are eating. Why do we do it? And then afterwards he says, ubizman azem. But today we say Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bizman shebeit hamikdash kayam. Again, it's just another example where the Rambam, his basic text of the Haggadah is as if Beit HaMikdash is up and running, and then he qualifies it with parenthetical inserts, what we do today in the absence of Beit HaMikdash. Now, our Rebbe the Rav spoke about Zecher LeMikdash, remembering Beit HaMikdash, on two levels. There is a section, a sugya, in Masechet Baba Batra, Daf Samach, that asks the question, after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, perhaps we should abstain from eating meat because there are no korbanot, there are no longer meat sacrifices. And then the Gemara says, well, maybe we should abstain from drinking wine as an act of mourning because there's no longer wine libation, nisuch yayin, on the Mizbeach. And then the Gemara says, you know what? Maybe we should stop eating grain products because there's no longer a korban mincha in Beit HaMikdash. So while we're at it, we might as well stop eating fruits because we don't have bikurim any longer. And you know what? We shouldn't even drink water because on Sukkot, they would pour water, nisuch hamayim. So the Gemara brings it to the obvious absurd point and says, no, that cannot be. So you can drink water and you can eat fruit and you can have grain cooked, you know, grain baked products, and you can drink wine and you can eat meat. But you should do things to remember the Beit HaMikdash. It should give you a pang of avelut, of mourning. And the Gemara suggests all kinds of things. Some are well known, some are less known. Under the chuppah, there are plenty of things we do that are Zecher LeMikdash. The most famous is breaking the glass. But, you know, there are some who have the custom that the kala, the bride, removes her jewelry before the chuppah. I'm sure some of you have seen this, or actually practiced it. That's also a Zecher LeMikdash and so on. There are those who, when they do renovations and repainting, they always leave something unfinished, which is something known. But here in Israel, we don't have to worry about that because every single contractor leaves something unfinished. Everybody fulfills this halakha LeMahadrin to the utmost. There's always something unfinished. And everything that's unfinished, Zecher LeMikdash. Fine. So that's, and then there are other things that the Gemara suggests, but thank God, you know, we can eat meat and drink wine and have fruit and eat the breads and cakes and drink water. And good thing the Gemara didn't talk about Diet Coke, then I'd really be in trouble. But this is all under the category of Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, that we should remember Yerushalayim. Remember Yerushalayim, especially at a moment of Simcha, remember Yerushalayim. It means with the simcha, there's an introduction of a pang of avelut, of mourning. Fine. So this we understand. There's another Gemara, Masechet Sukkah, Daf Mem Aleph. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai institutes, immediately after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, certain innovations. One has to do with Arba Minim, Lulav and Etrog, Hadasim and Aravot. The idea of lulav and etrog adasim ve'aravot is only for first day of Chag. That's what the Torah says. Ulkachtem lachem bayom harishon priyetz adar kapot marim vanafetz avot v'avinachat. But in Beit HaMikdash, there was a continuation of the mitzvah for the duration of the Yom Tov for 7 days. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem alokechem. Lifnei Hashem, I mean, what does it mean before God? The kindergarten teacher taught all the kids, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere. So what does it mean, lefnei Hashem? It's a technical phrase. Sometimes it means Eretz Yisrael, like Yonah is running away, milifnei Hashem, he's running away from Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes it means Beit HaMikdash, and sometimes it means Har Habayit. So the context sometimes determines the definition and limitation of where the lefnei Hashem is. And with regard to the lulav, is lefnei Hashem the entire Yerushalayim, that you have to take it for 7 days from a biblical point of view, or just the Beit HaMikdash area proper? That's a discussion between Rashi and the Rambam. But it means there's a limitation. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along, and he says, after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, we should all take the Arba Minim, the four species, for the duration of the Chag. First day is biblical, and the remaining days are rabbinic, midrabanan. Fine. So we do this. The source, the proof text that the Gemara suggests comes from Yirmiyahu. Tzion hi doresh ein la. Yerushalayim is sitting there. There's nobody inquiring about her welfare. And the Gemara says, obviously, we're supposed to inquire about the welfare of Yerushalayim. Shalu shlom Yerushalayim. So how is that manifested? So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, by showing a Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're not throwing in the towel, but we're going to keep the machinery nicely oiled so that when we get back to Beit HaMikdash, we'll know exactly what to do and how to do it. So you see that the theme of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is not avelut, it's not mourning, like the sugya in Maseret Baba Batra under the roof of Imish Gachet Yerushalayim, to introduce a feeling, a sensation of mourning, of avelut, within the world of Simcha, but rather it's in preparation of something great that's going to happen. On Seder night, we have a little bit of a mishmash, because there are certain Ashkenazi customs that have introduced mourning, avelut. For example, those of you who have the custom of eating hard-boiled eggs in salt water, the middle of the Seder, that's a custom of mourning, of avelut. The idea that the Rambam said that we should think in terms of Beit HaMikdash up and running, but we do this and we do that, or we don't do this, we don't do that, because there's no Beit HaMikdash. What did he have in mind? In all likelihood, what he had in mind was we should be ready to perform the mitzvot as if the Beit HaMikdash was up and running. Like, as if we're asking God, give us that opportunity. Yiratzon ke'ilu, as if I was doing it the way I should be doing it completely. And you know, when we say at the end of the Haggadah, in Nirtzach, Chasal Sid HaPesach Kilchato, Kechol Mitzvotav Mivachukotav, Kasher Zachinu L'Saderot, I mean, we did our best, but we asked L'Shana Bar Yerushalayim. You know, we know we didn't complete it. We know we didn't complete the job because there's no Beit HaMikdash. Now, I remember when I lived in Be'er Sheva for several years in the 1980s, I discovered something interesting. Ashkenazim have a custom that on the night of the Seder, we do not eat roasted meat. Certainly not roasted lamb. Certainly not roasted lamb. And some people, not roasted meat at all. There are different customs in the Ashkenazi world. But roasted lamb, for sure we do not eat. And the reason is so that we shouldn't be held suspect that we're eating korbanot outside Beit HaMikdash, outside Yerushalayim. Fine. So that's a minhag, a custom, that has something to do with avelut, mourning. Yet I discovered in Be'er Sheva, where 80% of my students were from Eidot HaMizrach, were from either families from Morocco, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Iraq, or Turkey, whatever. And they had a minhag that they actually, on Erev Pesach, they roasted a lamb in the parks. And those of you who've been in Israel on Yom HaTzma'ut, so there's, you know, the big Yom Tov of Yom HaTzma'ut that we call the mangal, which is the barbecues, the open barbecues. And the aroma nearby the parks is just such that if you don't like it, you run away. And if you love it, you go in quickly. So this, you have that kind of aroma coming out of the parks, the city parks in Be'er Sheva, on Erev Pesach. What are they doing? They're roasting the korban, not the korban Pesach, lamb. And why are they roasting lamb? Because they've adopted a custom that we're going to do whatever we can do. True, we don't have Beit HaMikdash. True, it's not a korban. But nevertheless, we're going to do like Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, to keep the machinery nicely oiled. And on Erev Pesach in the afternoon, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to roast lamb. So somebody made a comment on the chat with Svirata Omer, with the counting of the Omer. So with regard to the counting of the Omer, there happen to be two differences of opinion of how to understand the fact that the mitzvah, which comes in two parts, the counting of the days of the Omer and the counting of the weeks of the Omer. So there is an opinion in the Gemara that today, after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, all we are to do is to count only the days of the Omer, because the counting of the weeks is found in Parshat Re'eh, in Sefer Dvarim, where the context is Beit HaMikdash, Aliyah LeRegel, El HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham, and in the absence of Beit HaMikdash, why bother counting the weeks of the Omer? So that's one opinion. where that particular custom of counting the days of the Omer and not the weeks of the Omer is an expression of mourning. But the Rav said that even though we all also have the opinion, it's based on the Tosfot in Masechet Menachot, that we also all understand that the Sfirat HaOmer today is not biblical. And the reason why it's not biblical is because we don't have the offering of the Korban of the Omer. And I'll just say parenthetically, the Rambam disagrees with everything I just said. Rambam separates between the Korban and the counting and believes the counting is biblical today. But the Tosfot, representing Ashkenazi thinking, says that the counting of the Omer today is only rabbinic. Nevertheless, we count the days and the weeks. And the reason why we do this is to show that we are interested in maintaining the identical format of mitzvah performance as existed in the days of Beit HaMikdash. So you have these two different modes of Zecher LeMikdash. So while the Ashkenazim somehow put a little bit of a premium on the Avelut factor on the Seder night, the Sfardim a little took the other side of the coin and have more of a let's just do it the way it should be done, and let's at least remember to do it the way it should be done. And this is the reason that the Rambam indeed incorporates the Beit HaMikdash. He presents the Seder as if it's a Beit HaMikdash matter, and only by parenthetical inclusions will tell us what we do and what we don't do today in the absence of Beit HaMikdash. So I mentioned Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So the truth of the matter is, if we just leave the question of Misubin on the side, because we saw that the Mishnah, it's not there at all. The Rambam does have it as part of the original format of the Manishtana, because the Rambam has five questions, and then by deleting the question of Tzli, Eish, so you're left with four. So it's not that there were four questions. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, those who open up the Mishnah there, you'll discover only three questions. So the number four is not 100% absolute. Just like with the four cups, it's not absolute. There's an opinion that there's a drinking of a fifth cup too. We'll get to that in the third shiur. So maybe five is the critical number, not so much four. Maybe with the four sons, there's even a fifth son, by the way, which we'll talk about next week as well. So who knows four, but maybe who knows five? Maybe five is a critical number. But if we go back to the Manishtana, so who asked the Manishtana? What do you mean, who asked the Manishtana? The kids asked the Manishtana. All right, if there are no kids, so, you know, somebody else around the table, an adult can ask the Manishtana too. It's like if there are no kids in shul for Anam Zemiris, do you delete Anam Zemiris? No, the Chazan sings Anam Zemiris, that's all. So we want the children to encourage them and so on. So you want the children to ask Manishtana. Fine. But the Manishtana kicks off the questions. Do you say, and if a person is alone, does he ask himself the question? The answer is yes. You don't start with Avada Mayinu, but it's part and parcel of the Seder. So who are you asking it to? So number one, if one asks a question to the general public who understand, who on this base background in Torah, what is the proof text for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziyah Mitzrayim, of relating the story of Mitzrayim? 999 out of 1,000 will point to the pasuk "V'igadeta levincha v'yomahu," and you shall relate to your sons that on this day such and such happened. There's only one problem. If that's the proof, then if somebody's making a seder alone, then he's exempt from the mitzvah. There's no son, so you may say, "Okay, it doesn't have to be a son. It could be an extension. It could be just an acquaintance. It could be a neighbor. It could be a friend. Whatever it is." There's got to be somebody there at the other end. Begadata li, with a lamed. You're saying it to somebody. Somebody's being relating the story. So the Rambam doesn't accept begadata levincha as the principal text, but rather the pasuk in Shmot Yud Gimel, zachor et hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mimitzrayim. Remember that day that you came out of Mitzrayim. And the Rambam says, it's like the same zachor et yom ha-shabbat likatro. Zachor doesn't only mean to remember, but means to articulate. And Zachor at Yom HaShabbat HaKadosh means to articulate Kiddush. The mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night is in fulfillment of the biblical command, Zachor at Yom HaShabbat HaKadosh. So the Rambam says the biblical command of relating the story of the Exodus from Egypt is Zachor at Yom HaZeh Asher Yetzem Mitzrayim. If you have other people around the table, that's even better. And if it happens to be your own sons, that's even better. So that's already an upgrade. of the mitzvah. But the basic mitzvah is that you have to teach yourself. That's also a lesson. Furthermore, there were some who thought that when the children read the Manashtana, then the father, whoever's leading the Seder, continues, Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. So the Chatam Sofer, that's Rabbi Moshe Seifer from Preshburg in the 19th century, and he said that even though the children traditionally read the Manashtana, the father should reread the Manashtana. Where does he get that from? Because the Rambam says, V'omer hakorei, the reader says, Manashtana halayla zeh mikol halilo. Now, to be fair, in the Yemenite manuscripts of the Rambam, of the Mishneh Torah, supplied by the great Yemenite scholar, Talmid Chacham, Rav Yosef Kapach Zatzal, it read, Ve'omer lakorei, and the father and the children who asked the questions say to the reader, Manashtana, which indicates that the reader does not say Manashtana. But after investigating most other manuscripts, reliable manuscripts, and now I'm not speaking on myself, I'm going to throw out some names, Rav Nochum Rabinowitz, Zechat Tzadik Lebracha, who passed away just this year from Yeshivat Ma'al Adumim, who published an edition of the Rambam, Professor Shlomo Zalman Havlin, my mentor at Bar Ilan University, Rav Yitzchak Shilat, a great, great Rosh Hashiva at Ma'al Adumim and Rambamist as well. Many, many, many people who know the Rambam text through and through. There is an original hand autograph of the Rambam, him written, of the first two books, three books of the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam. It's found in Oxford, but it can be seen online. And there the Rambam reads the Omer HaKorei, and that's the way it's in print in most of the editions. And the reader then says, which means the understanding is V'kan HaBen Shoel, not a child asks. What does he ask? Whatever's on his mind, he asks. We're supposed to do things to stimulate the children to ask questions. But then the father starts, Manashtana Laila Zeh. So the Rav said as follows, a very, very important, a quotable quote, 60% to the understanding of an answer is the proper comprehension of the question. You know, we spend so much time in Gemara study with the question of the Gemara, with the question of the Ramban, with the question of the Tosfot. I mean, why bother? You know, three lines later, the Tosfot is going to say, V'yesh Lomar, and here's the answer. So let's get to the Tachlis. Why do I have to rack my brains to understand the question? So the Rav said, if you did not properly appreciate the question, you'll never understand the answer. The question is extremely important. And therefore, the father, in his role as an educator at Seder night, for Seder is nothing but a model lesson, is supposed to educate the next generation how to properly ask questions. I can tell you, in the field of education for many, many years, the worst thing in the world is for a teacher, especially in the presence of the students' peers, to say out loud, that was a dumb question. You never, ever, ever say something like that, even though it might have been a dumb question. Now, the Rav Zichron Levracha was a little different, and we were able to handle it from him. He sometimes came out firing, and he would say something to the effect of, you know, that's narishkeit, like that's nonsense. But we took it. We were okay. We were a little old already. This wasn't third grade, and we were able to handle that. If the Rav said it was nonsense, boy, it was nonsense. So you went back and you rethought, you know, what you just said. Of course, that was why most people were nervous to even make a comment in this year, because you never know how the Rav's going to react to those comments. But as a teacher, you do have to take the time to teach the student to rephrase the question and take the dumb question and make it into an intelligent question. You can do it. You can do it. And without embarrassing the student, the boy or girl, but you take them through the reasoning and say, just there's a little change here. It was a wonderful, now it became a wonderful question, a wonderful question. And you treat it as the student's question. You give that student a cheshek, an enthusiasm to continue asking questions. The father is supposed to teach the next generation how to ask a question. You know what you should be asking tonight? You should be asking the question about the mitzvot of tonight. Why? Because as we'll see next week, the Chacham is asking about ma ha'edot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Hashem Elokeinu etchem. That's what he's asking. He's not asking the question of the tam, mazot, what's going on here. Now, That's a legitimate question too. If that's all where the son or daughter is up to, mazot, what's going on here? What is this? So you deal with it on that level. But you have to strive to bring the child up to a higher level, to the level of ma ha'edot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem elokeinu etchem. What are the mitzvot? What are the halachot? What are those halachot that we are discussing here? And to show the child that this is the key to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's not just storytelling, but it's the telling of relating of the story through the use of the mitzvah. And those three mitzvot are Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. And the Rav said, why was it so important that the Haggadah tells us, it's found in the Mishnah, that if you don't explain these three matters, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, you didn't fulfill your obligation. So he said as follows. Maror is to remember the bitter past. We know in the history of slavery, you had this in the United States, you have other places where slaves were freed. The last thing they want to do is remember the past. They want to destroy the monuments. They want to burn the records. They don't want to know about what once was. And Torah teaches us, we will talk about it every single year. Matchil bignud. Whether it's the political enslavement as slaves, whether it was the theological, the spiritual, mitchila of the Avodah Zarah, we're going to talk about it. Because only then can you appreciate that which you have today. So that's number one, the moror. The matzah it comes to teach us, it's almost a anti-Western culture idea. You know, people measure success by their bank accounts, by their stocks and bonds, by their homes, by their vacation homes, and so on. That is the barometer of success. And therefore, it can be duly concluded that the most important people in the United States of America or Western society are athletes, because they make the most money. That's all. And the worst people, the lowest and the wrong, are teachers, because they don't make that much money. So if salary is a gauge of importance, we're in big trouble, very, very big trouble. Comes the mitzvah of matzah and teaches us lechem oni, poor man's bread. And poor man's bread, even though today matzah sometimes, especially shmura matzah, costs a lot of money. And I used the kibbutz to give a new interpretation to lechem oni, lechem shemevi lidei oni. It's the bread that makes you poor, because you had to spend a lot of money for the matzah. But the truth is, it's a symbol of poor man's bread. And poor man's bread teaches that you can get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even as a poor man. You do not have to have wealth in order to succeed with God. Quite the contrary. Sometimes the wealthier, the more bigger trouble a person might be in. And then comes the Pesach. Why the Pesach? The Pesach was not a selfish act of everyone bringing their keves, their sheep. It was a sharing experience. It was a chabura. It was always designed that people, we use the word in the halachic language, manui. In Hebrew today, that's called a subscription. You subscribe to a portion in the keves, and so many people will take part in the same keves. It's a sharing experience. Because slaves have this attitude that they had nothing, and therefore now that they're free, they're going to acquire wealth, and they're not going to give a penny to anybody else. They're going to keep it and keep it and keep it for themselves. And Yahadut comes to teach us, yes, you were slaves, and now you're free. Remember the days that you were a slave, but now that you're free, just remember that the wealth that you have is there for sharing. And take that lesson in the model lesson of Leil HaSeder and take it with you after Pesach for every single day until the next year of Pesach. And this is the Pesach Matzah U'Maror that we try to emphasize on Seder night. So this is really the crux of the questions that we ask at the beginning of the Haggadah. It sets the tone for the basic mitzvot of the night. And then before we get to drinking the second cup, we come back to it and we explain Pesach, Matzah, Maror to spell it out. And the Rambam tells us the explaining of these mitzvot, this is the Haggadah. This is what's called the Haggadah. So if you really want to know what the Haggadah is, it's in its highest form, it's the explanation of these three mitzvot. Okay, we've done some justice to the topic. Birtz Hashem, next week we'll deal with Arba Bonim, the four sons. And let me say that sons is just generic. I'm going to talk about daughters as well. Okay, so believe me, I'm blessed with daughters who are Talmidot Chachamim and spread Torah all over Israel. So I have no problems with the Arba Banot as well. So we're going to talk about the Arba Banim, Arba Banot, that we have at Seder night. And maybe there's a fifth son who just didn't show up at the Seder, very tragically. We'll see. And then in 2 weeks from tonight, we'll deal with the four cups. Okay.
Rabbi Adler, before we take a couple of questions, I take it a step further. I've always understood Arba Banim, you say it means sons, but it includes daughters. I don't think it means sons. So you're right. Sometimes Banim means sons. Banim atam Hashem Elokeichem. That doesn't mean sons. It means your children. There's no reason to assume the Arba Banim means sons, unless you want to say that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is only from a father to a son.
We go there. I would go to the psukim of V'haya ki sholcha bincha machar lemor, and when tomorrow will ask ma'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim. So that pasuk is in Parshat Bo with regard to Mazot, and it's in Parshat Vetchanan with regard to the question of the Chacham ma'idot v'chukim. In both cases, it says V'haya ki sholcha bincha machar, and with the Rasha it says V'haya ki yomru aleichem b'neichem. So the context of the psukim are clearly the one's sons.
Okay. All right, I don't want to, fine, we'll go there. Just before we take questions, just a reminder, if you're in the Pesach mood already, those who haven't had the pleasure of hearing Lori Novick, she's going to be giving shiur at 2:15 on Woman at the Seder. It's well worth hearing. I suggest those who haven't tried it to stay online and take a coffee break, and we'll start that at 2:15. But Rabbi, I want to thank you. But if you want to address some of the questions on the chat box, I know you touched upon a couple, but you can continue.
I missed the news anyway. Don't worry.
Sick of Omer, you already did. I'm just looking myself any of questions you didn't discuss yet. Ruth points out the custom of washing hands is also, of course, in a sense, a zecher l'mikdash, you know, where like the Kohanim.
Ruth Shalev, several roots here. The washing of the hands before we call urchatz is clearly a zecher l'mikdash, because people who study the Seder in school, before you eat fruits or vegetables that's wet, you have to wash your hands. That's all very nice, but most people don't do that. I'm talking about religious Jews, Orthodox Jews who understand halacha. It's not the custom. We don't do it. So why all of a sudden at Seder night, when we're going to dip the karpas in the salt water, all of a sudden we remember? The answer is that it's a zecher l'mikdash, that in the days of Beit HaMikdash, there was an upgraded awareness of tumah and tahara. So on Seder night, we practice this particular halacha that somehow in cyberspace throughout the year, and it's not really practiced. So that's also very much a zecher l'mikdash, in the sense of let's try to keep the machinery nice and oiled.
Okay, and I think the one point, yes, it's true, teachers don't make the least. That is true. Baruch Hashem. Teacher salaries, Baruch Hashem, these days, you don't get rich from being a teacher, but they're fine. At least in Canada, they're can't complain at all. Somebody asking restoration of Beit HaMikdash, that's a whole other topic, probably too much for now. Jeff, Kara pointing out, right, that's on all questions. In other words, the questions are not directly answered in the Seder. And I guess you would, okay, I'll let you say. In other words, I never directly answered the four questions in the Seder. They're alluded to, and you were saying at the end, we answered the end, but we never directly say, you know, exactly, but that probably is the whole point. The question is more important than the answer.
Well, that's really what Rabbi Gamliel says at the end, that whoever does not explain these three...
but he doesn't answer. You don't answer the question on misubin, and you don't answer the question on dipping. We never really answer those questions in the Haggadah.
Correct. On misubin, for sure not. For sure not. I showed that in the original Mishnah wasn't even there, nor in the Yerushalmi's version.
Right.
It wasn't there. But the Rav said that with regard to the Pesach Matzah Maror, what does it mean? Whoever does not explain or articulate the explanations has not fulfilled this obligation. So which obligation? So the first one was what I said in the shiur. He didn't fulfill his obligation of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's not that he didn't do the story right in its highest form. But then the Rav said something else. Normally, when you do a mitzvah, so what's paramount is the performance. If you understand the mitzvah, that's even better. But if you don't understand the mitzvah and perform the mitzvah, that's also okay. You have to do it. We said Naaseh V'Nishma. You perform and you try to understand. You try to understand. We sometimes do not understand. Sometimes we do understand. But what's paramount is the Naaseh. With regard to Pesach Matzah Maror, the Rav said that the Ta'amei HaMitzvah, the explanation, the rationale for the mitzvah, is an indispensable ingredient to the very performance of the mitzvah. He said, if you don't understand what Pesach Matzah Maror is all about, then you not, have not fulfilled the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach or eating Matzah with Maror, and so on. So that's a big chiddush. It's a very, very big chiddush.
I heard Rav Schachter mention that in Shir. I didn't know that was in the name of the Rav. I remember Rav Schachter mentioning that in Shir, that chiddush. But okay, very nice. Okay, I think that's all the questions. I want to thank you and the many thank yous. And we look forward to next week.